For centuries, the Society of the Black Dragon has sanctioned an ancient rite of combat known as the Kumite, open only to the world's most lethal warriors. It has never been won by a Westerner.
You are not Japanese. I can do it.
Now, for the first time, the true story of America's super agent, Frank Biggs, can be revealed.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
My heart's on fire. I'm going to push it over the wire. And what is the it I'm talking about? It's Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmScoreRejects.com.
.com.
Yeah, Kumite. This is, of course, the cult exploitation film cast. So good, it just has to be fattening. I am your host, Brian Salisbury. And joining me, as per usual, is my friend and co-host, a novelist, a screenwriter, a lieutenant of Megaforce, the reigning heavyweight champion of the living room Kumite. That is to say, the weird fight club we have before we record every week, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
I'm just really happy that you said the word Kumite, because I was like, oh shit, he's starting. He didn't tell me which episode we're recording. Fuck, which movie are we yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Kumite.
We're doing
Kumite.
We're doing kickboxer,
Kumite.
Obviously.
Kumite.
Hey, you know why we're talking about kickboxers and kumites and bloody sports?
Because it's not Cargillvember anymore?
No, because it is not Cargillvember.
What month is it?
I believe it is. Hashtag JCV December.
My name is Jean-Claude Van Damme. I will dance for you.
Oh, yeah. I am so happy that this is continuing on. But before we can continue on with continuing on, let me do a little housekeeping. And that is to tell you that if you like what we do here at Junk Food Cinema, you can always find our back catalog of episodes on iTunes as well as on blogtalkradio.com. You can also follow us on .com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/ you'll never guess. facebook.com/.com. facebook.com/junkfoodcinema.com. This, I'm going to wear out that drop. That drop is going to get worn out.
I really hope we force Merrill to put the drop in every time I just did that.
I hope he starts doing it in the middle of sentences where you're just like, and the great thing about this movie, just to fuck with us. And speaking of fucking around with us, if you would like to have more opportunities to hear us fuck around like this, might I suggest a little place called Patreon. And a special note about Patreon, if you guys have been following what's been going on with Patreon recently, they introduced and then immediately repealed a system wherein they were going to, their intentions were good, but they went about it very boneheadedly, which is that they were introducing this new concept where they were going to charge an extra fee for every pledge so that they didn't have to charge those fees to the creators. And they were like, hey guys, isn't that great? Now you could take home more. Isn't that great? And we were all like, no, that's not great, because we don't want to rob, as the police sirens go by, we don't want to rob our patrons of more money and encourage them not to pledge because they have to pay more. And, you know, like, we saw a lot of creators start losing patrons over this. It's like, this is a terrible idea, and you should have consulted any number of us about whether this was a good idea. And sure enough, today they were like, guys, we fucked up and we're sorry and we're not doing that. So if you heard that there were going to be extra fees involved in pledging to us, rest assured that's not happening. That is not a thing you have to deal with. So thank you so much for your support. Thank you for keeping the lights on. And again, you do not have to pay us anything extra to continue that support. And we are very happy about that. We never asked for them to charge you guys more so that we could get more. That's not a thing we ever wanted.
I didn't ask for this.
I didn't want this. This is your... Hold on. They started this war. I didn't want this war. Nothing is over. They drew first blood. I don't know what just happened there. I feel like I swallowed my tongue. Speaking of swallowing your tongue, make sure to be careful to keep it in your mouth as you step into the ring in the Society of the Black Dragon's most deadly tournament of all time. We're, of course, talking about the Kumite, a.k.a. Bloodsport.
An awesome human weapon.
There it's me just looking at it.
Who infiltrates the Chinese underworld.
I did not come this far to stop now.
Take him.
Enter a forbidden competition where every fighting style, every worthy opponent, every deadly technique, flash clash in savage combat.
Time to separate the men from the boys.
And only one will triumph. Now I break you. International martial arts sensation, Jean-Claude Van Damme. In Bloodsport, the true story of the ultimate champion.
I mean, we saved the best for second, I think, in JCV December.
I strongly disagree.
Oh, shit. I forgot what we're doing last.
Yeah,
no, you're right. You're right.
See,
we saved the second best for second week.
See, here's the thing about Bloodsport is Bloodsport is the beginning of a pattern. It is a very well-established pattern in the 80s and 90s of movies starring Jean-Claude Van Damme, in which he essentially just keeps remaking the movie over and over again until he gets it right.
Yes.
And when he gets it right, everyone had stopped caring so much that nobody saw it, and nobody saw what I think is his very best film and very best iteration of essentially this film. But this is the first.
Yeah.
This is his breakout movie.
Yeah.
This is the one where it's like, who the fuck is this guy? I kind of love him. That would prove to be a mistake on many of our parts. But no.
Disagree.
Yes. Strong disagree.
Strong disagree.
But this is the prototype for what would follow. And he would veer off into a couple of other really fresh original things. We're going to talk about one of them. There's another that I'm kicking myself, if you'll pardon the Jean-Claudism.
Come over to the pun side, Cargill.
Yeah, that we're not covering this month that I feel ties in nicely with next week's film, which is one of the more original Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, so much so that I didn't think about it because they never think of it as a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
I feel like we're thinking of the exact same movie because I had that same thought today.
The moment where we're like, fuck, why aren't we covering Universal Soldier this month?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought earlier today.
Because it's a movie so good, you don't lump it in with Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. Like, I mean, that is, yes, is that a backhanded compliment? Yes, it is.
No, that's a back-footed, that's a spin-kicking back-footed compliment.
Into JCVD, but it's true. I mean, that movie is a legit good 90s movie. Like, it is just, like, that's the movie that people who hate Jean-Claude Van Damme love anyway. They're like, well, I don't like Jean-Claude Van Damme, but I do like Universal Soldier. But we'll cover that eventually, no doubt. But this is Bloodsport, and there are a lot of very interesting things about Bloodsport. There's, you know, the directing is ham-fisted. Like, it's really shoddy at times in terms of story construction. But the thing that's consistent is how good the fight choreography is, how good the editing around the fights are, and how well this director tells a story during a fight. Like, that's the thing about the, I can't call this director a shit director because he's not. He's just particularly great at one particular thing, and that is telling a story with fists. And that is not to be insulted. That is not to be written off. The problem is getting to the fists is often he's really clunky about it. We start off this movie with a plot device that doesn't make any sense in this film.
And no,
I mean, let's have it out right here. It does not make any sense that this guy's got furlough and that for some reason, even though he's been really secretive about where he's going and what he's doing, that the government wants to protect him from getting hurt in any way, shape, or form because they've spent too much money training him.
Well, okay. That ties into one of the reasons I love Bloodsport as much as I do, which is that Bloodsport is not a movie. Bloodsport is therapy for one very delusional human being named Frank Dukes.
Yes.
Bloodsport is, in every way, so if you're not...
Let's throw out that this is based on a true story.
Yeah, Frank Dukes, who...
True story.
In the biggest of quotation fingers, like Richard Kiel-sized fingers making these quotes. Like, Frank Dukes, who Jean-Claude Van Damme is playing and whose story this film is supposedly based, is a dangerously insane human being. He is... It actually, I think it's because I watched this movie, I revisited this movie and then immediately watched I, Tonya, and there's a character in that movie who, you know, they're interviewing at the end of the film and he's talking about how he's a government employee and he's an expert on terrorism, and the interviewer's just like, yeah, but we checked and you're not. And he's just like, no, I am. And he's like, and they're like, no, no, you're not. And he goes, I am. And just like won't accept that he's full of shit. That to me is Frank Dukes in a nutshell.
By the way,
nutshell.
Sidebar, Itanya is
so fucking good.
Fucking great.
So fucking good.
So good. Fucking see it. See it in a theater. It's playing now. Go out and see it. Support it. It is it's one of the first releases from Neon.
Yeah.
And it is so fucking good.
Sorry, Cutting Edge. It's my favorite figure skating movie of all time. So because they mixed
that,
it with Goodfellas.
You know, had you not reminded me about Cutting Edge in that statement, I may have let that go.
Sorry.
But I can't let that go.
You know what Cutting Edge was missing? A Goodfellas subplot. That's really what this movie brings to the table that makes it, pushes it over the edge. Heart's on fire. But okay, so getting back to Frank Dukes, Stargrove.
Stargrove.
This, he's not only who this movie is based on, but he's on set as basically the fight choreographer and advisor. And Jean-Claude Van Damme, this, like we talked about, this is really his breakout movie, aside from, of course, standing in the background of a pivotal scene in the movie Breakin'.
Right.
Which has inspired a great internet meme that if you have been listening to this series, all two episodes of it, I've been using as the official jingle of JCV December, which is, my name is Jean-Claude Van Damme, I will dance for you. And then they just loop his, like, background scene from Breakin' over and over again. So that's kind of the first place he was spotted, but oddly enough, also a canon film. Not that odd, because JCVD got his role in this movie and in Breakin' by going to Canon Films, waiting in the lobby for Menahem Golan to show up, and then jump kicking over the top of his head. That was his, like, hey, here's my resume. I'm going to kick my resume over the top of your head. And Menahem Golan, being Menahem Golan, was like, oh, obviously I have to put this guy in a movie. But prior to that, Jean-Claude Van Damme was an actual championship martial artist. Like, he was a guy that had won awards and accolades for his martial arts skills in tournaments. Frank Dukes, on the other hand, is a delusional psychopath.
How dare you, sir? He holds some of the biggest world records in history in the Kumite, and was the Kumite world champion from 1975 to 1980.
Yeah, no, it's a whole mound of horseshit that's shoveled on us at the end of this movie in text form that just keeps going and going, and it's like a child who's just like, and then I did this, and I was also this, and then I did this, and I did this, and
And the guy from Revenge of the Nerds was there.
And you were there.
And the guy with the crazy eye was there, but his eye wasn't so crazy at this point.
And the bad guy was the guy from Enter the Dragon, except in this story, he's reciting all of Bruce Lee's dialogue from Enter the Dragon, even though he's the bad guy. And they didn't lock him up. They gave him a movie deal. I don't understand. But regardless, these two people meet, Jean-Claude Van Damme, actual champion martial artist, Frank Dukes, sociopath, and Frank Dukes decides that Jean-Claude Van Damme is not in good enough shape to play Frank Dukes and begins to train him. This is where, like, speaking of really pushing it over the wire, you have to be a special level of crazy pants to go, not only was I all of these things that have been completely not confirmed because I made them the fuck up, but I am going to tell this professional martial artist, you are not good enough at martial arts to be me. And the stories that just come out of that, like meeting on the roof for like a fight when they didn't get along and all this other shit, and Van Damme supposedly backing down when he saw Frank Dukes' moves. There's a lot of the shit I just don't believe. But that's what makes this movie so amazing, is because we're watching canon films totally play into and indulge this man's madness. So Jean-Claude Van Damme, to me, is the epitomization of who Frank Dukes thought he was. And so, actually, this movie and Itanya, watching them together, was kind of kismet. Like, there were a lot of things that started lining up for me. It's like, oh, you really think that's who you are? That's incredible, because you're not him. Jean-Claude Van Damme in this movie is so charming and sweet, and he's hungry, and, you know, he's everything that I kind of think was missing from him from Sudden Death last week. And I will say this, the other thing I started doing recently is I went back and started revisiting some Steven Seagal movies, and mea culpa I will straight up say it, I was wrong forever accusing Jean-Claude Van Damme of not having any charisma. Steven Seagal has no charisma. Steven Seagal is the real black hole of charisma. When you go back and watch Van Damme movies after Seagal films, you realize the subtle charm of somebody like Van Damme and why you don't always have to have one-liners, although, you know, it helps for sure.
Well, I mean, just like any galaxy, you can have more than one black hole, just sometimes they're bigger than others.
Oh, yeah.
Seagal
is the collapsed white dwarf.
I still have a hard time with the he's very sweet in this film because I still, like, my issue with Bloodsport, my principal issues with Bloodsport is that he made a better version of this movie and that the things that don't quite 100% work in this movie do 100% work in Lionheart. But he is working here, and it is my biggest problem with this movie is that there's really, for the first two thirds of this movie, there's no real reason to even care about Frank Dukes, like, except that this is supposed to be a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Except for this one incident that happened when he was a kid. That leads to who he is. And he is a badass martial artist with a strong sense of willpower. But aside from that, there's just, I don't find him very sweet or particularly likable. But you do grow to like him because of a relationship in this film. And I do really enjoy that. Like, and the thing is there's a romance in this movie that just has no chemistry whatsoever.
Oh, no, I agree with that.
But there's a bromance in this movie that totally fucking does. And when there's an I love you exchange in this movie, it's between,
so tender.
It's so tender, and it's between two dudes, and it is like, yes. Like, this is a bromance movie.
It was so tender, I was swiping right, man. It is like hard. Like, those guys go from being like, that's the thing is, it's not the typical bromance, though, where like they start off hating each other. They're kind of like slightly indifferent to each other for about 5 seconds, and then they become best friends over their mutual love of the game Karate Champ. And from there, they're best buds. Like, you know, and we're not mentioning, of course, who plays his best friend, Ray Jackson.
Nerds.
Donald Gibb, better known, of course, as Ogre from the Revenge of the Nerds films.
In his most likable performance of all time.
Which is hilarious to say, because in this movie, he is like the stereotypical ugly American, to the point that he is decked out head to toe in Harley Davidson attire.
Oh, yeah. No, he's the ugly American as fuck in this. And in fact, he's not even a fighter. Like, that's the thing about...
No, he's a professional wrestler.
And not even that.
Like WWF professional wrestler.
No, he doesn't. There's no elbow drops, no leg drops, no crazy moves like that. Literally, his fighting style is, I'm going to stand here and let you hit me a lot, and it's going to piss you off that you're not hurting me, and then I'm going to hit you really hard or throw you out of the ring with one hit. Like, that's literally, like, he's playing, like, Andre the Giant without the technique. Like, it is it is nuts, but it's kind of cool because he's not the only fighter in the Kumite that fights like that. There's also an Asian guy who does that exact same thing that focuses on that style, that like Ironwood style of I can take a hit and I can take these hits all day.
Yeah.
And you're going to get tired eventually, and you're going to let your guard down when you're frustrated, and then I'm going to fuck you up real quick.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to fuck around and punch you a couple of times. I'm going to hit you once, or I'm going to pick you up and I'm going to throw you out off the runway. And that's just it. Yeah. You're done.
Yeah. Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt here. Frank Dukes here. I got to set the record straight. I was Andre the Giant. That guy is based on me. I was the biggest guy in the WWF. I got body slammed by Hulk Hogan. The part in The Princess Bride was supposed to be me. I'm just saying. I'm Frank Dukes. That was me.
Earlier this year, I wanted to cover. I'm really wishing we'd covered it now because it would make a great back to back. I wanted to talk about, for summer of 87, Crocodile Dundee, which is 30 years old now, because Crocodile Dundee is very similar in that it's based on a true story, but the guy was nuts and the guy was crazy. And the story they tell is nothing like the real dude. The real Crocodile Dundee, sad story, guys, died in a gunfight with the cops because he was he was making meth. Like, he'd become a meth-making meth head that shot it out with the cops and was killed. That's how Crocodile Dundee fucking died. Like,
that's how he got that crocodile skin, was from all the meth use.
Yeah, he was some bush hunter, right? No, he was a guy out poaching alligators, you know, but he got caught. And so instead he spun this story about spending like 42 days out in the bush alone. And
let's cook some more crystal on the Bobby. That's not what they say, man. Come on.
And so he and Frank Dukes, I want to imagine them partying together at some point in time.
Oh my God.
Just the delusion of Crocodile Dundee and Frank Dukes. Like the movie version's like, hey, these soft, sweet guys. The real version's fucking nuts.
That's not a knife. That's a knife. No, neither one of you are holding knives. You're both delusional.
But in the 80s, we took these delusional, crazy guys and gave them fucking movie deals.
And what better
studio? Actually, Crocodile Dundee never made any money off that, which he sued Paul Hogan and the movie production company over, which I find amazing because the real Crocodile Dundee got no money off Crocodile Dundee, as well he probably shouldn't.
Well, he was so high on meth he actually accidentally sued Hulk Hogan, and Hulk was like, I don't know what this is about. What are you gonna do when Hulkamania's lawyers run wild on you? You're gonna shut down.
You're gonna lose Gawkers.
There it is. Being topical on this show, that's what we do. Kumite. So Kumite is going to be our star grove, I think, for the rest of this episode.
Kumite. By the way, this movie has one of those truly terrible 80s soundtrack songs on it.
Oh, but it's so good.
It's so bad.
It's so good, though.
It's so bad, except that once they get done with the flying high as the eagles or whatever bullshit it is, then the entire band just starts chanting, Kumite.
First of all.
Kumite. And it's like, fuck, yes.
First of all, motherfucker, that is Mr. Stan Bush himself.
Who's no log dog.
You know what? I'm just saying, Stan Bush is responsible for almost the entirety of the Transformers, the movie soundtrack, including You Got the Touch.
But he didn't meet me halfway across this guy.
I'm not going to argue that, but we can argue the merits of all these guys until we're blue in the face.
Except that the log dog will win every time.
Look.
The log dog will win every time. Kenny Loggins cannot be topped in terms of 80s soundtrack. You cannot.
Despite the enormous aspersions that you are casting, Fight to Survive is one of the greatest montage songs of the 80s, and especially because of the use of Kumite, Kumite, Kumite over and over again.
You do realize that not only Rocky IV, but The Karate Kid also had some of the greatest montage songs of all time.
All right,
also came out in the 80s.
I have this written down. We're doing it right now. Here we go. If we were going to set up a Kumite of all the 80s soundtrack warriors, who would win? And before you just automatically say the Log Dog, who is obviously the Chong Li of this situation, we have to run down the list. We got Stan Bush, Joe Esposito, the band Survivor, John Parr, Robert Tepper, and the Log Dog, all in this massive
montage. You didn't
mention
Chicago.
Okay, Peter Cetera specifically.
There we go.
In the montage Kumite. Okay, let's set this up here. Do you really think it's just Log Dog getting paved all the way to the championship?
Pretty much, yeah.
See, He's the Frank Dukes. No. I still think the Log Dog is your Chong Li. I think Stan Bush is your Frank Dukes. And I think the others.
The Log Dog would not cheat in the final fight.
But would he meet him halfway across the mat? That's what we need to know.
Only one guy in this list took the highway to the danger zone.
Okay.
And
while this is true, Stan Bush has the touch. And Robert Tepper is the angel of the city. So, I mean, there are merits to be argued. And Survivor, I mean, obviously Survivor has the Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, but Eye of the Tiger actually is mostly Sylvester Stallone. Like,
okay.
That's,
but out of all of them, who is the best around? Who is the best around? Who no one is ever going to keep down? Joe Esposito.
The Log Dog.
We can't do this. We're never going to settle down on this.
Yeah, you're like, you're arguing like who is the best professional wrestler of all time. Like, it's like, clearly it was Andre the Giant. No one was ever going to beat Andre the Giant.
The Giant shut down Gawker? No, he did not. Boom. Knockout. Finishing move. Close your website.
I mean, first of all, Gawker was awful, and Gawker got shut down because they showed his penis. Like, that's, like, I mean, if you're really going to claim that Hogan, who couldn't do a leg drop to save his life, is better than Andre and could have actually beaten Andre the Giant.
That's not the point. He could do a leg drop. The point is the leg drop is a miserably boring finishing move. It's not that he couldn't do it. It's that it's all he could do. You want to talk about great finishing moves? You talk about shit like the Stone Cold Stunner. That's a great finishing move. The People's Elbow. Great finishing move. A fucking leg drop is your grandfather's finishing move. And not even in the wrestling ring, but just when he's drunk and is really had it with this broken chair that he wants to get rid of. straight up. He drops a leg drop on it. What were we talking about? Bloodsport. Kumite.
I think that the log dog is like the best 80s genre, you know.
But does he hold the record? Does he hold the record for like quickest time to the word survive or quickest time to the word fire or quick? Like you could just like run down the list of. I actually thought about doing this at one point, making a bingo game where you listen to, you just grab random 2 second snippets from all these guys' songs. And there are words that if you hear that word in that snippet, you mark it on your card because words like warrior, fight, fire, heart, like all of these
win, absolutely win.
Like all of these words are in all of these songs. They are drawing from a very small dictionary. It's not Merriam-Webster. It's the Log Dog Dictionary.
I'm going to back up my assertion that this song, half of this song is truly terrible, and once the band starts chanting Kumite, it becomes awesome. Like the Kumite section of these songs is great, but the rest of it, it's just not.
You need to listen to the Blood Brothers remix of all of these songs because it opens with the narration from the trailer and into the song, which then goes into I think Final Countdown by Europe. It's like the perfect kind of dovetail from one thing to Kumite. We were talking about Bloodsport. We are going to talk about Bloodsport, I promise you. So
we've been talking about Bloodsport for like 25 minutes.
We have been talking about Bloodsport without really talking about Bloodsport. The other thing I want to say about Bloodsport is you're right. He's remade this movie several times. It's the best version. It's the best movie version of the game Street Fighter that's ever been made. And it's not even the Street Fighter movie that he was in.
Until Lionheart, which is actually the best Street Fighter movie ever made.
But it's not, though, because that is Rocky. I mean, we'll get there and put a fucking pin in this conversation, but we will get there. Lionheart is his Rocky. Lionheart is something way bigger than Street Fighter. Like, this movie revolves around an actual, like, multi-ethnic, like, giant sanctioned tournament, whereas Lionheart is just him trying to work his way up and make enough money to like go straight and help his brother out. And although it does have one of the many tenets, and I want to give all credit to where credit is due. I actually heard about this. I can't remember what website it is, but on the podcast, How Did This Get Made? They talked about there's a guy who breaks down every single Jean-Claude Van Damme movie into questions. And the first question is, we're going to use that metric to kind of guide us through this discussion. The first question, of course, being, does he have to avenge someone? And this movie, obviously, the answer is yes. And the person he avenges is Ray Jackson, his best friend, who falls victim to someone we've already talked about, Chong Li, played by Bolo Young, who was, of course, the imposing big bad of, or not really big bad, but big physical bad of Enter the Dragon, the guy who would just break people's necks willy-nilly, who gets the best death in the whole film when Bruce Lee stomps on his throat. Like, that is fucking brutal. And then the camera just holds on Bruce Lee making that face. It's so good. Guys, Enter the Dragon is so good. But here in this movie, they literally give him Bruce Lee's dialogue from Enter the Dragon. Like, there's a moment where Jean-Claude Van Damme has to do the Din Mak, the Death Fist, or the Touch of Death is what it's called. Death Fist is a porn franchise you don't want to venture into. But the Touch of Death is where he has to basically break a brick on the bottom by hitting the brick on the top and none of the bricks in between. And after he does it, everyone's celebrating. And then Chong Li goes, that's great, but remember, brick does not hit back. Which is exactly the fucking line that Bruce Lee says in Enter the Dragon. And I think he only has like 3 lines in the entirety of the movie, all obviously dubbed. But he is a very imposing villain. I really like how he steps into the ring and everybody's got their crazy, over-exaggerated, not quite to the level of The Quest, but very exaggerated ethnic style of fighting. And everyone's doing all these crazy moves to prepare, and he gets up there and basically just like wipes his nose. Just like, all right, I'm ready, let's do this. And then within seconds, we'll just snap necks, break arms, like put people in comas in the case of Ray Jackson.
The defining character trait of this guy is that once he's beaten you, it's only then that he decides to maim you.
Yeah.
Like, he'll fight tactically and beat you, and then once he's got you on the ropes, he will snap your leg or break your arm or put you into a coma or, in one case, fucking kill you.
Yeah.
Like, when you don't have to, and that is why, that's the only reason why we hate him. It's an interesting thing, because there's a point in this movie that where it could really go either way, where this could either be an honorable guy in a battle between two honorable guys, Or it could be the, you know, the trope of, you know, the really shitty guy and the really honorable guy and having the fight. And that's where this movie goes. There's part of me that wonders what Bloodsport would be like if Chun-Li were really honorable and there was some kind of snafu between them where he felt dishonored and he had to earn his honor back by defeating Dukes and defeating Dukes badly. And instead, it's the other way around, which is very interesting. It is the thing about this movie. It's incredibly base, but that's also what works about it. Like, this is a chicken soup movie. This movie is never anything that it's not pretending to be. It's skin deep, but it hits the notes mostly right through what's going on, and it hits all the notes right that you care about. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie, I think this movie's biggest failing is just the fact that there is this subplot that just doesn't fucking make any sense.
Are you talking about the plot of his sensei?
No.
Okay, because that I'll tell you what I have a problem with, but go ahead.
No, the fact that the military, like, he's on furlough. He's off for the week. Like, he's got time off. He's on vacation. He's off doing something, but somehow they've caught wind of what they've done, and they're spending a tremendous amount of resources sending, are they the FBI? Are they the CIA? Like, who the fuck are they?
Frank is going to fight in the Kumite, and we're here to stop him.
And of course, we're talking about Forrest Whitaker.
Babyface Forrest Whitaker in this movie, just getting shit on by his partner, his superior officer.
Yeah, and they're just chasing him around Hong Kong. Like, somebody gives a shit.
That, to me, makes total sense. When you look at this movie, like I said, in the scope of it's not a movie, it's therapy for a delusional person, that subplot makes all the sense in the world to me. Because, of course, Frank Dukes would think that not only could he escape from a military installation under guard and get into this tournament, but they would be so incensed that their greatest weapon of all time has just gone AWOL that they would send people after him.
Uncle Sam can't afford to let you get hurt.
Like, that makes total sense to me.
Sure.
Because Frank Dukes is a fucking psychopath.
In terms of the fever dream, dream logic, but this isn't fever dream logic. This is a movie. And as a movie, like, it's like, what the fuck? Like, this subplot doesn't add anything to the movie. It doesn't make us care about Dukes. In fact, it actually makes him shittier because
he has his own Mentos commercial in the middle of the film.
Yeah, because he keeps bailing on, you know, like he runs away from the Air Force base. Like, why would you run away from an Air Force base?
Yeah.
Like, they just let you drive off. Like, that's just I lived on Air Force bases.
Yeah, you're not a prisoner.
Yeah, he's like, they just, for some reason, they found out and they're chasing it. Like, that adds nothing to this film. And if they needed to add more to this movie, give us a couple more fights, because God damn it, every fight in this movie, every fighter in this movie is interesting. And the thing about this film is, when you get into the fights, most of the time with movies like this, you can tell the way they're shooting them, the way they're dressed, the way the fighters are portraying themselves. You can tell right away who's going to win, and you already know what the narrative is. Not in this fucking movie. Like, you're watching this, you have no idea who in what fight is going to climb up those ranks.
Yeah.
And you get to see some pretty goddamn great fighting.
Well, and I think that is the one thing that we need to stress throughout most of JCV December is that the fight sequences, by and large, 9 times out of 10, you can say whatever else you want about Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, the fight sequences are usually really good. And I think that's one of the things in this movie that you have to give a lot of credit to JCVD, because while, yes, Frank Dukes is technically the fight supervisor or whatever title he gave himself, this movie, apparently, from what I read during my research, sat on a shelf for a little while, and they weren't sure if it was ever going to be released, until Van Damme himself actually went in and re-edited it with the editor and kind of made it usable. And I think a lot of that shows, like, the editing in this is really good because it's brutal, but there aren't a lot of cuts. You get to see, like, kind of the full, you get to see these fighters and their different styles in their full scope without too much cutting away, and yet it doesn't look totally bullshit either. So they really walk that fine line and do it very well. And you do see some really interesting fighters, including actually the first guy that Ray Jackson tangles with, who looks almost exactly like John Stamos, with a John Stamos muskrat haircut, and I was like, holy shit, it's Ogre versus Stargrove. I've been waiting my whole life for this and didn't even know it. And then, of course, you have the African fighter who jumps around like an ape man. You have the Muay Thai guy. You have
the Arab fighter who, quote, just fights dirty.
Quote, Arab guy who could not possibly be less Arab. There's a lot of really strange things.
I can
going
tell
on.
He's Arab because there's Arabic written on his shorts.
Oh, that's right. Just like the Iron Sheik is fucking, yeah, okay. Again, professional wrestling rearing its head in this. But okay, so as we're going along here, well, the thing that we need to touch on next is that while that movie is going on, there's another movie going on here, which is Jean-Claude Van Damme's backstory and his relationship with his Sidoshi, his sensei in this movie, who apparently when he was a kid, he was they moved from Belgium to the middle of the spectrum because this kid that they've got playing him as a youth, like there's something special going on with that kid throughout this whole 90-minute fucking backstory flashback.
It's 15 minutes of flashback.
It's a lot of fucking flashback.
I timed it today. It is 15 minutes of flashback.
No. It is too much flashback because the thing that is most important about that flashback is not even in that fucking flashback, which is they mention that, you know, when he was a child, he was with this group of bad kids and they were going to steal the sword. The guy who owned the sword was a martial arts master, saw some good in him, and initially took him on to train him, but was just kind of using him as a punching bag for his own son, and they grew to become friends and like brothers, and then the son dies.
How?
Exactly. This is the problem with this fucking flashback, because the only way that what happens next makes sense is if that kid died participating in the Kumite. Because as a kid, that son says to Jean-Claude Van Damme, one day I'm going to grow up and I'm going to honor my father by participating in the Kumite. And then he's just dead. And they make no mention whatsoever of how he died, if he ever participated in the Kumite. The only way this flashback is justified in its length and what it's actually trying to do, because without it, without that little piece of information, Jean-Claude just keeps saying, I'm going to honor my sensei, who is then, of course, by this time also sick and dying, by participating in the Kumite. Why in the fucking hell would participating in an illegal underground tournament where people are routinely killed and really serves as a way for gamblers to make money, how would that possibly fucking honor his sensei unless he was doing it to avenge the death of his son, which is what they never fucking mention?
Because that's the whole thing that he was training for. That's because he won the sensei won the Kumite.
Right, and he was training his son for the
Kumite. And he was training his son so that his son, because their clan, and when he shows up, he's like, I'm here representing the Tanakas. And they're like, the fuck you are.
Yeah, no.
It's like, sorry, white kid, you are not a Tanaka.
Round Eye is what they routinely call him in this movie. But no, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, if you're going to do that.
I think it makes sense.
It absolutely does not. If you're going to do that, then the son has to have died participating in the Kumite instead of just off screen somehow.
I disagree. I think it's fine that he dies in a car accident or however.
But they never fucking tell us how he
dies. I'm with you. I think it's fine. I think it's fine in storytelling because they've sold how important this is and how broken up Sensei is that his son has died because literally his entire life has been focused on collecting all this knowledge so he could pass it on, so it could keep getting passed on because this style has been taught through their family for generations. But yes, is the better storytelling that he died in the Kumite and Sean Lee killed him? Yes, that's the much better story. And him to go and fight for that and then Sean Lee to know that and for Sean Lee to then maim his buddy as a result, that's an even better motivation for the end of this. But Frank Dux, his, and I'll call him Frank Dux.
No. Dukes is Dukes.
Frank Dux. Wasn't creative enough a delusional asshole to come up with that revenge subplot himself. And frankly, if you did that and said based out of true story, there would be a point where even 1980s audiences would be like, oh, fuck you. That didn't really happen that way.
But they will believe that a Harley Davidson clad, I'm sorry, world's strongest man from the 80s level in shape, which is to say just heavy, can progress far enough in the tournament to take on last year's champion and be the only one, by the way, until Van Damme, who gets some good shots in on Chong Li, and then of course immediately starts celebrating because he's not a fighter, he's a professional wrestler. Because
he's an idiot.
He's immediately trying to hear it from the crowd, like calling out to them.
That's also the other thing about, like, he almost has him, and then he's like, yeah, I'm going to dance around because I'm an idiot and I'm a plot point, not really a character.
But that's what you would do in the WWF. Like, it's so, like, that guy should be fighting, like, Hacksaw Jim Duggan or the Bushwhackers. Like, he should not be fighting in the Kumite. He should be fighting in the Royal Rumble.
He would be one of the Bushwhackers.
Yeah, him and Paul Hogan would be the Bushwhackers. Right. Oh my gosh, there's the movie we never got. Paul Hogan and Ogre as the Bushwhackers.
He is, but now that you mention it that way, he really isn't, you know, kind of like the off-brand dime store version of Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
He really is, right?
Jim Duggan was awesome, and he was really great, and he'd come out with that 2x4, and this is the off-brand version. It's like, it's Jim Duggan, right? Well, not really, but he's good enough.
Meanwhile, I feel like Frank Dukes was more of a Jake the Snake type, if you know what I mean. I feel like that was probably more his bag. Frank Dukes is insane. So, yes, so we get this quote-unquote backstory where it's like, I have to honor my fictive brother by participating in this tournament that he may or may not have been killed in. We're not going to tell you.
Also, important to note, these are some things we're going to be talking about this month in the remaining episodes. There are a lot of Jean-Claude Van Damme-isms. JCB disms.
Yep.
And this one has a bunch of
them. Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like these matrix that have been, you can literally judge every Van Damme movie with these questions.
So he's got the training montage.
Of course,
you know, that where you not only learn how he became a badass, you also learn how he did the splits. Like, that's something that in all of these training films, we have to see how he learned how to do the splits. Like, that's just...
That's his Ben Parker getting killed. That's the thing you have to flashback to every single time you do a JCVD flashback. Yeah.
Now, one of the things I find really admirable about this in these films is that Jean-Claude Van Damme is very much selling the idea that in order to be this big of a badass, you have to work for a lot of years and you have to suffer. That it is easy, that you do not just wake up one morning after reading a book and you are a badass. Again, one of the things I had a problem with Sudden Death last week, where it's like, it's one of those movies where it's like, yeah, we're not even going to really, like, Peter Himes just doesn't care how Jean-Claude Van Damme became Jean-Claude Van Damme. He just fucking is.
We established that he was a Mega Man villain called Fireman.
Yes. Well, we're going to be talking about him again next week. Because we're covering another Himes film. Himes just doesn't care about that backstory, but everything that Himes isn't a part of, all of a sudden it's like, yeah, here's 15 minutes of how Jean-Claude Van Damme became Jean-Claude Van Damme. And it's fucking cool. And it's neat watching all these crazy training things because they are kind of a brief synopsized version of, you know, the 36 Chambers of Shaolin.
Yeah.
And so we get that. And we get that here, and we get a few hints of a certain type of training that we then flash back to additional scenes later because they decided not to show us early enough. They're like, oh, yeah, that didn't, you didn't really need to see all the blind fighting. We see the one scene with him blind fighting with the tea thing, and that's enough.
The blind tea service, you mean?
Yes, and we'll just, later in the film, we'll show that he also did other blind things.
I think he's secretly training him to be a geisha. I think that's the thing that they're not talking about with all the, like, stretching him out on the rack and, like, making him serve tea and, like trying to physically mold him into the ideal. Like, I think he's training him to be a geisha.
Sure, white guy, go ahead.
Round eye.
Sure, white guy, go ahead and insult, like, thousand-year-old tradition. That's fine. Like,
what? No, I'm not insulting thousand-year-old traditions. I'm insulting the blind tea service, the oddly specific training that doesn't seem. Of course, it ends up being the most crucial part of his training because this is a martial arts film. But for fuck's sake, you have to question. At some point, you have to be like, Miyagi, am I just doing your fucking chores? And that's exactly to me what that blind tea service is it's just, you're training me to do shit around your, you're training me to be a butler, at the very least. I'm sorry I said geisha. I'm not sorry, because that's exactly what he's training him to be. What were we talking about?
I don't know. My dog just came over and burped at you.
Kumite.
Kumite.
Kumite. Kumite. Yeah, so we get, so of course the battle between Frank Jackson and Frank Jackson? No.
No.
Jackson. What's his first name? Michael Jackson. No, Ray Jackson and Chong Li ends with him being in a coma. And prior to the, oh wait, of
kind
course.
Of, because the only shot they could salvage has him blinking in it and looking up and then closing his eyes again. And they're like, it's the only shot we could get.
So. We're not doing another take. We're not. This is a canon film. We are not doing another take. Where is the cocaine? Before this, we of course meet the. We have to have a woman in this movie so that there is a love interest character who is this reporter who is desperately trying to get the story on Kumite, even though. It seems to be a thing that everybody knows about, but nobody knows about. And she's going undercover.
It's everybody knows about and nobody talks about.
So it's Fight Club.
Right.
So it's literally a Fight Club.
Here's a woman, like, again, things about this movie that just don't fucking work. Here's a woman who doesn't give a shit about fighting, doesn't like it, but is desperate to get the story on it.
Yeah.
For no apparent, like, I'm going to go undercover and deal with all these CD elements in to get a story about something I have zero interest in.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is the one note 80s reporter character is there's a story here. I got to get the story. Like she's like one of Morrow's boys. Like she should have a Walter Winchell like tag in her hat, like Flash, people are killing each other in the Kumite. I don't give a shit about it, but it's a big story. And she goes undercover before you start labeling her as a strong female character in this. She goes undercover as a prostitute and she turns to Jean-Claude after she's had sex with Jean-Claude Van Damme and turns to him and says, it's not the first time I've gone undercover to get a story. And I'm like, what other stories did you get by going undercover as a prostitute? Because I feel like that's not always the answer. I feel like maybe you should have other bags of tricks in your bags of tricks.
I do think it needs to be pointed out that there are a few too many love scenes in Jean-Claude Van Damme movies as a whole. Like Jean-Claude
There's a reason.
Yeah, there is. But
that's exactly the reason. To see that ass. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme is very proud of his own posterior because it shows up. Like, that's another question. Do you see his ass? Yes, you do in this movie. Absolutely. And of course, the other one we have to ask, and you kind of touched upon it already, the splits. He does the splits, I think, like 7 times in this movie.
Oh, yeah. He does it a lot.
I think this may be the most splittastic of the Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. Absolutely. So yeah, they have this quote-unquote relationship that's really just forced dialogue between the two of them that ends in a love scene, and then she's going undercover to get the story about what I'm not entirely sure, because like you said, everybody knows about it, nobody talks about it. It doesn't really seem to be that big of a deal. I don't know.
What's really, really kind of crazy is it's 2017. You know, here we are 30 years later. We have MMA. Yeah. Like, this is just very private MMA. Like, this is a bunch of people fighting and they just don't report when somebody dies. Like, that's just the only difference.
Yeah, what's weird is I would, for a movie called Bloodsport, and there's a line where Ray Jackson literally at one point says to JCVD, like, that's why they call it Bloodsport, kid.
Oh, because people get punched in the face
really
and they bleed a little
bit. I
fucking
figured that out myself. I'm not a moron, but thanks, Ray. But what's funny about that is this movie is less violent than even the next time he made this exact movie, Kickboxer. Like, it's called Bloodsport, but it's not as brutal as the very next time he made Bloodsport.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I really wish that there, you know, the brutality of Kickboxer was in Bloodsport. Because Kickboxer's really brutal. It's got some great fight scenes. But there's a reason we're not really talking about it this month.
It's not good. Like,
it's really not.
It's like, there.
Like, I want to love Kickboxer so much. I want to love it, and I just can't.
So much of that movie is Van Damme on vacation. It's just his fucking vacation videos in Bangkok. It's him, like, wandering around, looking at reclining Buddhas. Like, at one point, I don't want to veer too far off, but there's one point where there's, like, naked Thai kids swimming in the river, no big deal, except then Van Damme, like, takes a picture of them, and it's like, that seems odd, but it's just
that's a different kind of tourist vacation.
Exactly. It's like you're in Bangkok for a different reason than this tournament, I feel. But it's like so much of it is just we didn't really shoot anything, so just wander around Thailand and be a tourist and we'll film you.
They call it the Roy Moore tour.
I was just letting that joke land, and it did. So very.
It's so timely since he was just elected.
Yes, we had to go back in time and police him out of the Senate.
No,
wait, that's a different movie. We're not talking about that one yet.
Literally, this is the last time we'll ever be able to tell those jokes. So. His relevance is over at this point. When people are listening to this podcast this week, they'll be like, "Really? You're still telling Roy Moore jokes?"
Well, no more.
Not anymore. Jokes.
Hey-o.
Not anymore.
Hey-o. Speaking of Bloodsport, which is the movie we are ostensibly still talking about.
I've seen that.
Hey-o. But yeah, I actually, the one really brutal thing that happens in this movie is Chong Li breaks. By the way, calling him Chong Li, and I'm a kid who grew up playing Street Fighter, was very fucking confusing to me. Because I was like, no, that's the woman who does the woman
Chun-Li.
Who does the splits and flies around. And like, it just, I couldn't anyway. But he breaks a dude's leg and you actually see the bone like sticking out of the leg. That's the most brutal thing that happens. Everything else is kind of simulated neck breaking and limb breaking. Like nothing actually, it's not like a Seagal movie where like he literally will just snap bones in half throughout the entire movie, but it's not as brutal as Kickboxer. And this one is the one that's called Bloodsport. Although Kickboxer did give us that great ending song, which is like the only good song, because that movie tries to do what this movie does with the Stan Bush stuff, and it fails pretty much all the way through, but it does have a really great ending song. Never surrender! Bloodsport, again, the movie we are actually talking about. So, yes, he has to avenge someone. He should technically have to avenge two people, but we don't touch upon that in the backstory. He does the splits. He gets the girl. We see his ass. What else are we missing here? The other one was, does the bad guy resort to basically low tactics to try and win? And Chong Li throwing the dust in his eyes. Sure enough, that training, that blind tea service training, comes in handy once again.
With additional flashbacks.
With additional, because you didn't, just in case it didn't hit home for you in the 27 minutes of original flashback, 15. Here is more, I don't care. It felt like 35.
Dude, the real number is bad enough. 15 minute flashback in an 85 minute movie is pretty fucking goddamn ridiculous.
No, I don't want to.
Especially since I would argue that there's probably not 15 minutes of dialogue in this fucking movie.
Look, I don't want to toot my own horn here again, Frank Dukes, but I actually invented the flashback. I invented, in fact, all cinematic montage. Like, you can take Sergei Eisenstein and shove him up your fucking ass. Like, I invented the cinematic montage. I just wanted to set the record straight. I'm Frank Dukes. Because that's him.
Frank Dukes sound like he's from...
I don't know who Frank... No one knows who Frank Dukes is. He's not a real person. He never existed. He's fucking Sammy Jenkins. Remember, Frank Dukes should be tattooed on Van Damme's fucking hand, because I don't think he's a real person. I think he's a figment of his imagination, because that's the only way any of these stories make any goddamn sense. But no, I do like Van Damme in this movie. I think you're right. The Mentos commercial of him running away from Forrest Whitaker and his partner and literally like playing Bugs. You could totally make a fucking Mentos commercial out of that. And in fact, I think the internet has. So fucking go to YouTube and search for that, because I'm pretty sure they've already done it. Like, it's capped off with him peering out of a rickshaw and just kind of tipping his cap, and you could see where the freeze frame would be, like, Mentos, the fresh maker. It's insane and awesome at the same time. This entire movie is insane and awesome. Like, there's a scene where they're walking through, they're filming in the Forbidden City at points, which is, I think, one of the last movies to get to do that. And there's a scene where they find the tournament, and their guide, who's a guy named Mr. Lee, who is just, he's got like a fucking rad-tastic 80s mullet and giant fucking Coke bottle glasses. And he takes them to some lookout, and explains the situation. And this guy, who has got the biggest face I had, like the biggest face since Tom Noonan, looks at him and goes, "Okay, USA." And then literally Ray Jackson's just like, "Okay, USA." Like, what the fuck is, like, I'm ogre and that weirds me out. Yeah, it's the movie is filled with just little weird scenes like that. But again, I think when we get to that final fight where you have Chong Li throwing dust into Frank Duke's eyes and him having to kind of take that moment, reset, and then literally just beat the ever-living shit out of Chong Li. It's great. Like, it does serve that moment where you feel like your fist is in the air and you're like, fuck yeah, I love it. This is everything I wanted a martial arts movie to be. And it did become the prototype for a lot of movies. Like, I mean, this movie started a franchise because there are several Bloodsport sequels. There's actually one that was made very recently where Van Damme came back as a different character because it just had been running that long. And then you had movies like Best of the Best and, you know, like all of these movies that kind of spun off from this. Some of them, as we mentioned, starring Van Damme and being this movie again. I still think The Quest is the worst of those. Have you seen The Quest?
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's pretty fucking awful. So, I mean, I guess...
I mean, it's not the worst Van Damme movie. It's the worst of this type
exactly.
of Van Damme movie.
Exactly. It is not the worst Van Damme movie. That is sad to say because The Quest is pretty bad, but it's not the worst Van Damme movie. But this movie, like, I can understand how this is a movie that would kickstart... I know I said it.
Stop it.
I know I said it. I'm not going to apologize for it. His career, because, I mean, he really does, like... He's not a great actor, obviously, because nobody in this time period who was, you know, an action star was a great actor. That's just not something that, you know, went hand in hand. But the one thing I will say about Van Damme, as opposed to his predecessors, Stallone and Schwarzenegger, is that those guys are both so big and so kind of meaty that you don't really, in a fight situation, they're really just chucking guys left and right or they're using a gun. Van Damme, for me, like when I was growing up and watching these movies, was the first action star where I was like, oh, this guy can actually fight. Like, aside, of course, from somebody like Bruce Lee, it was like, this is an action hero who I totally believe in this fight can do all of these things, all of these kicks and these splits and these punches like that are so fast because he's wiry. He's got that kind of wiry physique. And I totally buy, and it totally shows that Van Damme was himself a champion martial artist before moving to the States and deciding to try and parlay that into Hollywood stardom. And it's a different kind of action hero. And I dug that because at the time we had Stallone, we had Schwarzenegger, who were really two sides of the same coin. Like, they weren't really offering us anything different from one another. And then you have Van Damme coming along and really kind of breaking that mold.
And by breaking the mold, by being a very strong, talented guy with an accent we can barely understand.
Yes, he in that way, very similar to the two people I just mentioned. Absolutely.
Brian, thank God I found you. Who the hell are you? I'm you from the future. 1 week in the future, to be exact. Okay, what's going on now? See, I've come back in time because you've made a fatal flaw. Okay. You forgot in this episode to mention that Bloodsport was the inspiration for the game Mortal Kombat. And in fact, the character of Johnny Cage is based on Jean-Claude Van Damme in this movie. That's why he punches people in the splits move. Yeah, I don't feel like I would have forgotten to mention that. But you do! You do, Marty! You forget! Did you just call me Marty? I must be going! But before I do me a favor, okay? Lay off the fucking Taco Bell. Wait, it's been a week. How much Taco Bell? I must be going!
So, okay, so if we're going to kind of rank this, Cargill, where would you say Bloodsport, top 5 Van Damme, top 3 Van Damme? Like, where does it sit for you?
It might crack into the top 5, but I'd have to go and revisit a few other movies. Because This is one of those movies, honestly, I loved as a kid. I saw it in a theater, watched it a lot on video, I loved it. But this movie is not really aging very well with me. Like, every time I watch it, I like it a little bit less. And it really is one of those movies that it's like, I shouldn't like it less. But, you know, the more, you know, the internet has taught us, you know, all about Frank Dukes and how much of this story is bullshit. And then there really is that problem of a movie that you accept as a true story. You're like, holy shit, that's amazing. And that's like, oh no, he totally lied about all of it. And it's like, well, why didn't he lie better and tell a better story where the son died in the Kumite? Like, I don't understand. Like, lie better if you're going to lie about your true story.
I love that you've come around on that, because when I first proposed you told me I was crazy.
No, you weren't listening to me. You kept cutting me off. You weren't listening. I agree that that's a better story. I just always bought the fact that he died that way. I don't think it's a flaw in the story that he doesn't die that way, but it sure as shit is much better if he did die that
way.
Yeah. Like, because there is that impetus of, I'm going to go and I'm going to avenge your son. Because of course he's going to be, you know, the guy who's going to be fighting is the guy that killed your son, and I will try to defeat him. Like, that's a much better story, but I think just him dying and the, oh shit, now this is the end of my bloodline. This is the end of the knowledge I have to pass on. No, wait, let me step in for your son is a valid story element, and it does work. I just think that your story just the one in your head is much better. But so in that I'm like, you know, maybe it's top five. Mm-hmm. I think there are, I don't even think this is the best of these type of Jean-Claude Van Damme that I mentioned.
It's not. And I was wrong because I completely forgot about the movie we're covering at the end of the month.
Yeah. We'll talk about it now. We're talking about Lionheart.
Lionheart,
you know, mentioned it, and Lionheart, everything that we talked about in this one, that they do wrong, they do right in Lionheart. Like him being chased by two guys, that is very similar to this stuff. You know, the impetus of why he's doing it, the way the villains act, the motivations of him and the villains all work to make a really emotionally rewarding film that, yeah, I don't think the Bloodsport is. I think this is a film you watch for the fight scenes and the bromance. I think the bromance is the best emotional part of this movie, is watching him and this guy become buds. Because if you've ever been a fish out of water, if you've ever been in another country, if you've ever been in another town that's not your own, and you're there and there's one person that you have something in common with, all of a sudden you guys are new best friends. Like, it's just like, that's just there's a psychological study they did on it. That's, you know, people who see each other on the subway every day and never speak to each other, run into each other while on vacation in Europe, and all of a sudden they're best friends. It's like, hey, you, I know you. We see each other every day on the tube. Yeah, well, we never spoken to each other. Doesn't matter, we're best friends now. Yeah. And I totally buy that relationship and how that happens and the way he goes and gets revenge for him. It's all great. So that's worth watching. But I don't know, compared to some of the Van Damme films there are, especially even the, you know, especially when we're talking about, we're going to talk about five Van Damme films this month with the Deep Dish included. And that one is one of the best of his. So maybe it's top five.
Yeah, I think this is top three for me. I agree that Lionheart's the best. I probably put something like Time Cop in the second slot. And then this would be right at number three for me. Like, I really like Bloodsport. And it's interesting because when I first saw it, I didn't care for it much.
You like it better than Universal Soldier?
I do, only in that Universal Soldier, as cool as it is and as original as it has a weird, like, five-act structure that where the movie ends and then another movie begins and then ends. And it's just, it's really strangely paced. But beyond that, I think it's fucking amazing. And seeing Van Damme go up against Lundgren really makes me mad at myself for not programming that as part of JCB December. Don't get me wrong, I am the villain in this story. But yeah, no, I definitely think, yeah, that would, you know what? No, I think you're right. I think Universal Soldier would be two and this would be three. But the first time I saw it, I didn't care for it much until I kind of realized who Van Damme was and the kind of the style that he had, and that the fight scenes were actually really good and everything else. Like, there is a lot of silliness, as I mentioned. Like, at one point, there's a flashback to Van Damme saving the Shidoshi's son as kids, and there's a kid in the background where a kid, and I want to stress this, like a six-year-old kid wearing a Bartles and James t-shirt, which, if you're not familiar with Bartles and James, I actually once got in trouble when I was very young at school for quoting that commercial all the time, because I didn't know what it was. I just remember, thank you for your support was what they would say at the end of every commercial. It was a wine cooler, and it was a very popular wine cooler in the 80s, and there was a fucking child wearing a Bartles and James t-shirt at this school, and I'm just like, your parents have made some mistakes. That is clear to me now. And yeah, so throughout the whole movie, if you're paying attention, like, there's a lot of little weird shit outside of the Mentos commercial.
So now I'm curious, the junk food pairing, is it Bartles and James or is it Mentos?
No, it's actually neither. As we talked about, one of the things about Van Damme that you can find in every movie is, of course, him doing the splits. And I started thinking about this Kumite and this tournament that it represents, and how you have eating challenges all over the country that kind of constitute a food Kumite. And of course, the biggest food Kumite for the banana split takes place every year in California in Santa Barbara, the Giant Banana Split Challenge. This thing it's enormous. It is like 9 scoops of ice cream, 2 bananas, 2 brownies, whipped cream, nuts and cherries. It's the kind of thing where if you eat all of it, it's free. And I feel like anytime you enter into a food establishment, where if you finish the entree, it's free. You're not in a restaurant. You are actually, you have stepped into the Forbidden City, and you are in a food kumite. So find yourself a giant banana split eating contest and enter that food kumite immediately. That is the junk food pairing for this movie. Yes, you're right. There's Mentos that you will probably need afterwards because you will be, if you're, especially if you're lactose intolerant, we will bring up all kinds of horrible scents. And then Bartles and James is really going to give you the strength to go into something like that. So maybe just combine all of it together and really have yourself a culinary blood sport. Congratulations. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We will be back next week with, as we mentioned, we're going to be talking about Time Cop, which I'm super excited about because, as they mentioned on Friends, if you haven't seen it, he, like, totally changes time. And that's awesome. But until then, you can find us on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio. If you really like the show, you can always go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema and kick a couple shekels into the hat. If you do that, you will actually get access to bonus content that nobody else gets to hear. And we do a lot there. We do mailbags and top fives. And we just started doing the deep dish for the slightly... higher tiers, which by that I just mean more than a dollar an episode. So you actually do get quite a bit of content there. So check us out there. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MassaWyrm, MassaWyrm.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/ Brian Salisbury Critic. I forgot my own fucking Facebook page there for just a moment. And I want to do something here really quickly, something that we always said we would do, and we have had a pledge at this level, so I want to give a special shout out to Purple Peacock, who pledged $10 this week. Thank you so much for supporting us and being that level of junkie on. We really do appreciate it, and you're aces in our books. You are somebody who we definitely would put our money on in the food kumite.